another show, a new week here on the Damage Report in our second phase of quarantine. I'm in a big old building, no one else is here. It feels like zombie times. Hey Francesca, how's it going?
Oh hey, good to have you here. Good. I'm fine, we're here again. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're just a figment of people's imagination. We don't really know at this point.
Yeah, it's starting to feel like that. Am I really here? Is there a building? I mean, it's sort of like a fever dream because every week, almost everything's the same except you have a different background. So it's like, is this really happening? Am I dreaming up the entire thing? But I like it, it looks good.
Look, shame works wonders. So people didn't like the green. I'm changing it up, trying to work with what I got.
I think all of your backgrounds have been cool. I think you should pick the one that you like, okay? So anyway, glad that you're here. We're out of convention time, so that's good. We've got that going for us. And now we're on to the election, which is just like 2 months away, man. It's coming up fast. And in anticipation of that, we have a lot of stories that we're gonna be talking about. Some of them having to do directly with Donald Trump's campaign strategy, which is maximum chaos, maximum vigilante justice. So we're gonna be talking about that. We are gonna have a few updates on the coronavirus. Is it a big threat? Some people would say no, but then some of those people have already died of the coronavirus. So can you really trust them? And then another anti-masker rant, this time in a Walmart in Alaska. It's really something. So we got a lot to get to, obviously. If you are already in the room waiting for us, please hit the like button and let people know that the stream is active. Offer up to the algorithm gods that which they crave. And with that, I did want to mention one other thing. If this can be mentioned, Francesca, I'm not sure, but you talked about the relaunch of something before the show. Is that something people can know about?
Oh, you're the best, John Iadarola. News broke. My show on AJ Plus is coming back September 13th and every Sunday until hopefully we end fascism. but there are only 10 episodes, so guys, we gotta make it happen by November. So make sure to check that out on AJ Plus September 13th when it drops.
That's awesome. So all you really have to do is with each one of your episodes, you have to take out 10% of the fascism in America. So it's not too much, you're pacing yourself really.
One click at a time, you know.
Exactly, look, exactly.
Hopefully some recommended videos pop into the Alex Jones. Is he still on whatever platform he's on? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm in a recommended video, which is all you need to get white America back on track.
There you go.
We're in a recommended video.
I can only speak for at best 10% of white America, but maybe that's enough. Okay, and with that, why don't we jump into the news? Lots to talk about, obviously. Really unfortunate news coming over the weekend. It's one of those things that just you find out on Twitter and there was no way you could have seen it coming, but actor Chadwick Boseman passed away. He was 43, I believe, young, and apparently had been battling colon cancer for about 4 years. Basically no one knew about it. He was incredibly private about those sorts of things. And it comes as such of a surprise because he has been so incredibly prolific over those years, coming out with so many movies. I mean, not only obviously Black Panther, which a lot of people know him for, and I'm sure that we're gonna talk about here, but playing James Brown and Jackie Robinson and Thurgood Marshall, and just seemingly spending every single minute like churning out these roles that are so amazing. And I've been going back, you know, after he passed and watching some of the movies I hadn't seen. And it's just so devastating. Someone taken away so young that meant so much, not just in America, but across the world. And the more I see more of his works outside of the MCU, the more I think he would have been among the best actors of his generation if he hadn't been taken so tragically young. So we just wanted to talk just a little bit about this. Francesca, how did you react when you first saw the news?
It was like turning the knife of an already horrible week, right? A week ago is when Jacob Blake was shot. Then we've had, you know, murders and extremist violence since then, excuses from the police. And then Chadwick Boseman, the Black Panther, dies. And I think, yes, I mean, it's so funny that you say all like Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, these are like three diametrically opposed characters. It's not easy to play those three characters. It really isn't. But truly that iconic role of Black Panther, you know, I saw it twice in the theater and, you know, again, a lot of people were like, I've never cried at a Marvel film. Now I know, John, you've cried at every single Marvel movie.
Not everyone, not Thor 2.
For those of us not steeped in the that universe, Black Panther, I thought, was the best movie of the year. It was everything to all people, but especially Black Americans, seeing this superhero, this sort of like Afrofuturism, as it's called, the land of Wakanda, kind of being almost this like peacekeeping role eventually. And I think that really meant a lot to people. And just look at all the young kids dressed up as Black Panther, who, you know, every time I see those videos of them doing Wakanda Forever, a little piece of me is, you know, just melts off and goes away. Yeah. But so yeah, it was hard. I mean, this is the sort of moment we're in. It's like we're down and we keep wondering if how much worse it can get. And then an awesome actor who, by the way, just interpersonally, you watch his interviews, incredibly humble, incredibly thoughtful. I mean, potentially he was also living with colon cancer and had a very acute awareness of this life and wanted to get as much done as possible and was very grateful for everything. So again, also just a really wonderful human being.
Yeah, exactly. He gave a short speech while accepting an award. I don't remember if it was at the Oscars, but definitely track it down. It was awesome talking about, you know, what the production of that movie meant and the struggle that actors like he and others have, you know, had to deal with and continue to deal with even to the present. Yeah, it's just great. It's devastating. I mean, look, obviously, you know, we talk a lot about Marvel on this show for some reason. I don't know why, but it means a lot to me. And I know it's not cinema or whatever, but I think that those definitions are absolute BS. You go to the movies to experience something, to experience an emotion, a feeling, an aspiration, and those movies deliver that. Black Panther delivered that. T'Challa delivers that. And you know, it's the stupidest thing, and I understand it's just a movie, but you know, the moment from Endgame at the end where T'Challa and others from Wakanda come out of that portal, that hit me harder than anything I've seen in a movie because of the buildup of more than a decade and everything that went into it on screen and off screen. And nothing is gonna hit me like that in a movie for the rest of my life. And that was him. And to now be working through, you know, some of his other movies and just realize how much of a loss this is. I understand he's an actor. You get to feel terrible when an artist like this is taken away, and this is certainly one of those moments. Okay, with that, you know what? I'm gonna see. I think that there were some super chats specifically about this. I saw
better be.
Some other people in the chat were talking about you know, how they're struggling specifically with colon cancer, or that they have cancer, but they're being very private about it. And you know, obviously, there's a lot of reasons for that. Yeah, I mean the chat is full of, you know, people saying Wakanda Forever and talking about him. It's so sad. He was so young. So young. And the stuff he was doing, like I read about some of those shoots, like the scene in South Korea that they shot for Black Panther was this incredibly difficult, physically rigorous. They did the fight scene so many times.
Oh gosh.
And he was doing that while struggling with cancer. Like, it's unbelievable. And doing it in a way that nobody could have suspected it. It's just so amazing.
Yeah, you see him on magazine covers and he's got the scars. He's like shirtless, ripped scars from operations.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was a real life superhero, clearly. And I just want to say, I get why he kept the cancer private. I think it is such an emotional roller coaster for people who are struggling with cancer, who have loved ones struggling with cancer and battling cancer, because it changes one day to the next, one month to the next, and you don't want to get your hopes up too high. You don't want to be too low. You want to keep, you know, be optimistic. It is a struggle. F cancer forever and ever and ever and ever and ever.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom, In each episode of Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the past few days, Donald Trump has doubled down, tripled down, quadrupled down on trying to provoke as much violence as possible in cities across America because he thinks it's in his political interest to do so. So very simple opportunity was given him over the weekend to condemn Kyle Rittenhouse, who murdered multiple people in Kenosha. Here's how he responded to that.
And if you could comment about the other shooting that took place in that community.
Yeah, I see.
You mentioned the National Guard going in, yeah. Law enforcement, but this was a young man, 17-year-old, who's facing murder charges for having shot two people.
Yeah.
There's some folks who've said conservatives are holding up this young man as, you know, having done so within his rights to sort of self-protect. And I'm wondering if you've read much about this case, if you have concerns about ordinary residents with guns in situations like this and what dangers that might present.
Well, you know, that's under investigation right now, and they'll be reporting back to me over the next 24 hours, 48 hours maybe max, and we'll have a comment about it. But that is right now, we're looking at it very, very carefully.
Yeah, he's looking at it really carefully. So in the past, I mean, this is just a part of being Donald Trump. You know, when there's this big event like this, you don't just shoot off the hip with an impression. You wait 2 or 3 or 5 days before saying something. That's Francesca. That's what he always does in cases like this, right?
Measured response. Don't jump to conclusions. You know, first let's get all the facts in and then we'll figure out how to spin it. It is so clear that they have not figured out how to spin it, that they are actively saying this guy is and could be our hero. And we know that Ann Coulter is saying that he should be our next president. Mm-hmm. Let's not piss Ann Coulter off, shall we? Right? We've done that before. Now we're still scared of these, you know, grifter pundits. And what they're gonna say about us not leaning into the white supremacy enough. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And that on the right message boards or the wrong message boards, if you will, that's a win. That's a win in the white supremacist book, right?
Yeah.
If the president doesn't condemn you, that is a win. Now, notice how the journalist was so just the kid gloves that he asked the question with, right? It was incredible because he was like, don't you think that Americans with, you know, sort of running around with guns, wouldn't that be dangerous? He didn't mention that Kyle Rittenhouse was in a Trump rally. He didn't mention anything about Trump's previous statements about white nationalism and good people on both sides. He didn't go into that question with any kind of accusation. Just completely laid out the red carpet to be like, sir, can you express basic empathy right now? Yeah. No.
And he could not. He's waiting to find out the details. It was 4 days ago before that, 3 days before that. He's got to wait and find out. But obviously, I was being sarcastic before about him waiting. He doesn't wait. No, if he wants to opine on something, he'll opine on something. Great example of it. Mehdi Hasan tweeted out a great point that I'd sort of missed. Trump tweeted out a video. It's from apparently from a subway or like the stop of a subway. And it's a black individual pushing a white individual against the side of the stopped subway. Where was that? When was that? Who were any of those people? We don't know, and the president doesn't either. He just tweeted it out because it has a black person committing an act of mild violence against a white person. And that's it. That was the entire tweet. The president just tweeted out an example of a black person hurting a white person because that helps him. Not because he thinks that helps him. It objectively helps him with his base to put that out. He doesn't know anything about that. Apparently has nothing to do with BLM or any of that. It's two people kind of fighting briefly, but he thinks that it helps him. And so he tweeted out and he just left it up. Because explicit dog whistles, inspiring people to acts of vigilante violence against black individuals, that's the path. And look, to be fair, the reporter, you're right, was kid gloves. He didn't express a thought about Kyle in the question. But while Trump wouldn't give his thoughts on Kyle Rittenhouse there, that isn't to say that he hasn't given his thoughts. Because he also liked a tweet from Tim Pool saying, Kyle Rittenhouse is a good example of why I decided to vote for Trump. Trump liked that tweet.
Jeez.
So you kind of do know a little bit about what he thinks about this domestic terrorist. And the thing is, ever since then, you know, the whole thing was this Trump supporter decides, I'm going to go defend property that's not mine, it's someone else's. I'm going to illegally get a gun, cross state lines, and then throw myself in a situation where I can plausibly say I fear for my life so that I can shoot people. He wasn't the first, he's not the last, because people are doing it in cities around the country. I want you to take a look at what happened with a caravan of Trump vehicles attempting to run over civilians. Take a look at this. So that's in Portland, and a whole bunch of trucks with Trump flags and things like that tried to run over some civilians who were crossing the street. The civilians had the right of way. You could see the white sign there. And you'll notice also, if you slow that down, that none of those trucks had license plates on, which I would argue proves that they did not want to be identified after doing things that were illegal. So they try to run people down. They are macing people as they drive by. Now, those people to me look like attempted murderers using ISIS-like tactics to kill protesters they disagree with. Yes. The president had a different opinion, because when the news initially broke that a whole bunch of cars were headed to Portland to show support for him, he called them great patriots and lavished praise on them as the violence continued. Because of course he is. He wants his supporters to grab guns or cars and start brutalizing and killing people. He couldn't be more obvious about it. And that's what he's doing, because he thinks it's going to help him in the election. He thinks it's going to make people scared of Biden being president, because hey, look how the country is right now when Biden's not even president.
Because he knows the way that white supremacy and racism impact everything we do in this country, and the media especially. Because he knows that if, you know, one of those guys in a truck is hurt, and one of them in Portland may have been killed. There was the man in Portland, and he might have been a right winger. That the narrative is going to be suddenly about dangerous BLM activists. That all you have to do is provoke people who are demonstrating and who are outraged about police violence. Just provoke them with federal troops. Provoke them with your extremist thugs. And if any amount of violence comes the other way, then you've justified it completely. Then all the white fear that you've been stoking, that all of the ways that your own presidency is a complete and utter failure, it doesn't matter anymore. Because you can point to the brown radicals, right? The out of control black people, and you can win an election on that. So this is the whole thing. These trucks don't have license plates. I'm sorry, how many stops have we seen that have ended in murder? Police stops that have ended in murder that started with a broken taillight. Someone not having a front license plate or a back license plate, an expired driver's license, all of these things. I mean, this is white supremacy on parade, right? And it is so painful and it is so disgusting to have to see it. But we have to be clear-eyed about exactly what he's doing. It's not that he wants, you know, these nut jobs in the streets. It's that he knows if he can provoke activists from the other side, then he wins, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's so sick that, like, if there's violence against Trump supporters, he feels like that makes him look better. if his supporters kill people, he feels like that makes him look better. Should it be the case that in a democracy, a president thinks he does and possibly does do better the more murder there is in the streets? Is that what the case should be in a democracy?
Well, this is the thing, is that he's, yeah, he, but he's blaming all of that on Biden, which is the ultimate gaslight of gaslights.
Biden's not the president. I know, it doesn't make any sense that Biden, who is not the president, is responsible for violence in Donald Trump's America. He's been president for multiple years. And so, look, I just want to, because I've said that, you know, he's being very explicit about wanting this stuff. So it's all he's been talking about recently, tweeting, "The only way you will stop the violence in the high crime Democrat run cities is through strength." He said that after Kyle Rittenhouse murdered multiple people. He liked that one so much, by the way, that he retweeted it later on. He was really a fan of that tweet that he sent out. He tweeted, "Portland is," he retweets a lot of his own tweets, it turns out. "Portland is a mess and it has been for many years. If this joke of a mayor doesn't clean it up, we will go in and do it for them. If I didn't insist on having the National Guard activate and go into Kenosha, Wisconsin, there would be no Kenosha right now. Also, there would have been great death and injury." So Kenosha wouldn't exist as a place if Trump wasn't sending in the National Guard. You'll notice,
of course, I put it on the map.
Exactly. What violence has there been in Kenosha? Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back. There were a couple days of protests where nobody died, and then a Trump supporter murdered some people.
Yeah.
So it kind of seems like maybe it's not Trump that's actually tamping down the violence. It seems like Trump supporters are the ones that are doing all of the violence there, of course.
And like, I know, look, corporations are people, but buildings are not people. So if they are set on fire and burn, once again, not a person. I know that's hard for we Americans to sort of get in our heads here. This presidency, though, it's a lot of like, I don't know if you guys had older brothers. John, did you have an older brother? Do you have an older brother?
I do have an older brother.
So do you remember the whole like, why are you hitting yourself thing?
Yes.
This campaign is the why are you hitting yourself of presidential campaigns. You know, your brother or a bully grabs your arm and just starts hitting you with your own hand. And like, why are you hitting yourself? Why are you hitting yourself? You're hitting me. This is your America. This is your doing. So this absolutely is the tactic once again to instigate and instigate and instigate. The BLM protesters are not instigators. Trump is the instigator.
Kyle Rittenhouse, I mean, not that, like, if him murdering people isn't going to, while they're trying to apprehend a murderer, isn't going to convince people, the fact that there's a video of him running up behind a woman and punching her in the back of the head multiple times, I don't know why that would work to get people to realize that he's not some sort of hero. But yeah, some church raised $250,000 for his legal defense. The murderer's legal defense. They raised all of that money. It's more than the money multiple campaigns for the victims of his violence were able to raise.
A church.
But that's how it works. A church.
A church.
And again, I will say what I said the previous week. No rational person thinks that if Kyle Rittenhouse had gone to Kenosha without a gun and scrubbed some graffiti and had a first aid kit, no rational person thinks that he would have died, and certainly he wouldn't have been capable of killing anyone else. He made the decision to bring a gun because he wanted to use the gun. That's why you carry a rifle with you, because you desperately want to use it. And what a sick state. I mean, we keep implying that Trump thinks this may help him in the election. I don't know yet if that is true. But it definitely isn't the case that it's definitely not true. And so in 2020, the most explicitly fascist, explicitly white supremacist campaign of our life might work to get him reelected. Mm-hmm. And that would be enough to get people to forget about the economic collapse, the fact that he totally fell asleep during the pandemic and 180,000 plus people have died. It is that powerful a motivating force in America in 2020 that you can win on that and literally nothing else. Nothing but xenophobia, fear, and telling people that if they want to go out there and kill people that they don't like, that's not just okay. That is the patriotic thing to do.
Yeah. And I just want to say, I also just want to name Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum, who were the two gentlemen, two brave men who were killed by Kyle Rittenhouse. We always remember these crazed murderers' names. We don't remember the victims' names. So Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber. I also want to say that it is on all of us to call the people that we know who may be susceptible to the kind of gaslighting and rhetoric and spin that the Trump campaign is doing right now, and check in with them and say, hey, how's it going? I see, maybe you watch some of the RNC, maybe you see what's going on in Kenosha or Portland, and you might have some misconceptions. I just wanted to check in and send you, I don't know, the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, a perfectly fine white guy who had a beautiful, you know, monologue about racism and how we need to do more to end it and who the actual victims in this moment are. You know, but like, it is on all of us to make sure that we cut through the gaslighting and we remind our friends and our family, the people even we're afraid to speak to, that this is Trump's America, that Trump did this, that if you think it's the other way around, you're wrong. And obviously we say it in a different way, but this, Trump did this. Democrats should be repeating it every single day. We should be repeating it. Progressives, leftists should be repeating it to our friends and family, to our social circles. Trump did this, Trump did this, Trump did this. There's no discussion, Trump did this. This is his America. This is, and if you think that it gets better because we give more money and more weaponry to the police, we have more emboldened federal troops, some special unit off of Customs and Border Patrol that are in Portland for some reason, pretty far from the border, right? Like if you think that it gets better with more quote unquote law and order, you're wrong. We need de-escalation, we understand that. So again, just reach out to your people, whatever you have to do, reach out to your people, the people that you don't really want to reach out to. But it is on us because Democrats are not doing a great job of leading this charge.
Yeah, and you're going to have a great opportunity soon because Trump is going to Kenosha tomorrow. And just imagine what he is going to say and do there. Imagine the violence in his wake. And the thing is, like, if he goes out there and tells them to shoot people in the streets, it's going to get covered on Fox. Totally normal. The worst violence that can happen in America is against a building. That's what we're gonna hear on Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. Murder's fine. Maybe it's heroic. Republican Steve Scalise shared a doctored video of Medicare for All activist Adie Barkin. I wanna show you just the last few seconds. This is a reality according to Steve Scalise.
Fundamentally transform the country.
We ain't about to wait until the next election. We about to go get that motherfucker.
Do we agree that we can redirect some of the funding for police?
Yes, absolutely.
So that comes after, that's the end of a basically 2 minute video that Joe Biden is an Antifa super soldier trying to murder every white suburban lady or whatever, which is crazy in its own way. In normal times, we just do a video about that. But what you saw of Adie right there is him saying a question, can we redirect some of the funding for police? He said it there and it was in text there, which is weird because he didn't actually say any of that. The clip originates from a conversation that Barkin and Biden had months ago, which has also been taken out of context in the past in order to falsely portray Biden as if he supports defunding the police, which he 100% does not. The discussion, which was hosted by the progressive organization Now This, showed Biden calling for an increased focus on mental health and possible reforms for police practices. At one point, the question is, but do we agree that we can redirect some of the funding? So Scalise doesn't think that that's convenient enough for the narrative that he's trying to spin. So he just inserts a fake computer generated voice.
My God.
As if it's madness that we're talking about this. How sick, how offensive to do this.
My God.
So Adie tweeted about this saying, these are not my words. I've lost my ability to speak, but not my agency or my thoughts. You and your team have doctored my words for your own political gain. Please remove this video immediately. You owe the entire disability community an apology. They 100% do. Now, they did remove the video eventually, but that does not mean that they regret it or they're apologetic, as we'll get to. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to weigh in, Francesca.
I mean, just no, absolutely speechless. I mean, Adie Barkin is a hero and he is a dying man. He is a dying man who has used his life to do more than most of us will do in our entire lives when it comes to pushing for real healthcare reform, for Medicare for all. But even that, Adie Barkin's done something more than that, which is he's worked with all kinds of politicians, including Biden, who aren't even on board fully for Medicare for all. But because he is so dedicated to this country, to his kids, to the kids he will not see grow up, because he is so dedicated, he is continuing to be there, to talk to Biden, to push him. And Biden, I mean, good on Biden's camp to have the grace to put a hero like Adie Barkin on there. And then you've got Steve Scalise, man, you POS, how dare you? Like, you don't have in your little finger, you have nothing that Adie Barkin has. You don't have the heroism, you don't have what it takes. If you were stricken with the same with ALS, imagine.
Yeah.
You couldn't do what he does. So anyway, I'm like, it's so offensive. It is offensive to the disabled community. It's offensive to all of us. And initially I was like, wait a minute, did they just fake his voice? I didn't get whether it was just an edit or whether they straight up took a different computer voice and made it sound like Adie Barkin. Yep, that's what they did. Yep, they did the most offensive possible part of it.
They thought the fact that he speaks through a computer assistance device, they thought score, it'll be easier to manipulate. And they did it. That's what happened. That is how sick these individuals are. Now, the only thing that's sick about this, though, I was looking for some different sources about different aspects of this. Here's the Fox News headline on this. Steve Scalise removes video accusing Biden of wanting to defund police after backlash over alleged manipulation. Alleged. That was today that they wrote that. Alleged. There's no alleging. They added words that weren't there. But if you're on Fox News, who can really say? Maybe it was, I don't know. And the thing is, that's sick. Obviously, the crime itself is the worst thing. But they don't agree. Scalise spokesperson Lauren Fine told the Washington Post that the words were added on to the end of Barkin's question for clarity in the video. I often make things up to add clarity. Fine said such edits are common practice in such videos for television and social media. Oh, are they? I have no doubt that you lie a lot. It's important to get the essence of a longer exchange into a short clip. Think about that. For clarity, to get the essence, they add fake words to make you falsely believe that Joe Biden holds a position that he 100% doesn't and has multiple times explicitly said that he doesn't. I've heard the tapes and I don't think Steve Scalise had edited them yet. I think Joe Biden is actually against defunding the police. I wish that he wasn't, but that's the candidate we've got. So to get to the essence and for clarity, they lied about a disabled activist's words to lie about a candidate's position.
Yep. This is like the fortune cookie, add the in bed to every fortune. You can't just do that. You're trying to make that like an actual political policy. You know, you can't just add defund the police after everything to spin it.
That's pretty good.
This is the thing though with Biden and defund the police. Like you mean the architect of the crime bill wants to defund the police? I don't think so. With the top cop as vice president? I don't think so. Now, I absolutely think that the Republicans are right. And I think the Democrats and the progressives need to understand that, yes, I think Biden and Harris in office will be pressured and do see the writing on the wall when it comes to doing something very concretely, not just, you know, middling reforms, but to rein in the police in this country and to, you know, to actually begin to address the racism that we have in the policing system. And both of them, I think, know that. And they know that their records don't speak well on that. But to think that they are for defunding the police, I mean, like John said, if only, but like redirecting funds, we can go there. You know, that is the first step, right? We start to redirect the funds. But again, like Biden's not with that. Biden's not like, down with the movement for Black Lives. I wish he was.
Yeah, I wish he was in the pocket of AOC. He's not. Yeah. He's not. Run against the mediocre candidate that you're actually running against. How about that? That's a strategy. You could probably win. So for months now, I think possibly more than any other show on TV or the internet, I have probably obnoxiously focused on Donald Trump's ever-present desire to go herd. We have talked about it so many times. And there was a reason. Because although they kept saying they'd moved on, they kept implying that their strategy for the pandemic certainly wasn't going to be to just let as many people get infected as possible. Once again, it is confirmed that that is 100% what their strategy is. One of President Trump's top medical advisors, this is coming out of the Washington Post, is urging the White House to embrace a controversial herd immunity strategy to combat the pandemic, which would entail allowing the coronavirus to spread through most of the population to quickly build resistance to the virus while taking steps to protect those in nursing homes and other vulnerable populations, according to five people familiar with the discussions. The idea is, if that's not clear enough, just let people get it. Some people will get sick, get hospitalized, be injured for the rest of their lives, and indeed die. But then eventually, hey, enough people will be immune that it'll be tougher for the virus to spread through the population. This is a bold strategy, considering the death toll, which we'll get to in a second. Also bold strategy, since we have no idea if you even develop immunity to the virus. It seems like the sort of thing that you'd want to be sure about that before saying we should do that, but that hasn't stopped these people. And so how many people would die, hypothetically, if we were to pursue this strategy that they are 100% pursuing? With a population of 328 million in the US, it may require 2.13 million deaths to reach a 65% threshold of herd immunity, assuming the virus has a 1% fatality rate, according to an analysis by the Washington Post. Over 2 million people would die if they follow this strategy. And this is not something that Donald Trump doesn't understand. This is something that Donald Trump has been talking about for literally months. He did a town hall back on May 4th. Here's a quote from it. Well, it's too soon to say that really, I guess, because you know, we're still in the middle of something, but certainly we would have lost a lot more people, Brett. If we would have gone, as an example, you call it herd. If we would have done herd, in other words, everything is wonderful, let's just keep going. Question, herd immunity, the president. We would have lost 2.5 million people, I think, or 1.5 million, or 2 million people. That was May 4th, when we had already found out that he kept bringing up going herd multiple times, and Dr. Fauci had to tell him, you can't let millions of people die. That was months ago. And so they have elevated this new guy, which we're gonna talk more about, who is just pushing all the time to do this. And apparently, according to the Washington Post, the administration has already begun to implement some policies along these lines, according to current and former officials, as well as experts, particularly with regard to testing, which they have tried to limit as much as possible.
I need to puke. So just
that might be a symptom.
Yeah, I might be getting sick, or I might just be watching what is happening. I mean, first of all, even if this was your strategy, show me how you're protecting nursing homes, USOB. You're not protecting nursing homes, you don't care. All right, and this needs to be another thing that we need to, when we talk to potential Trump voters, when we actually are making this case, look, these are his voters. He's losing seniors in Florida, man. Do you realize what that means? Like, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about the elderly, and he's left them out to dry. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. What are you doing to protect seniors? You're not protecting seniors at all. We know you're not protecting nursing homes. But also, this is all just an excuse for his giant failure. This is a plan F or Z or wherever we're going, right? Like, this is a plan because you can't admit that in the richest country in the world, you cannot implement basic contact tracing, quarantine, isolation, and mass testing. You can admit that you have politicized the CDC and Health and Human Services and your own administration to the point where anyone with the expertise and the knowledge for how to do those things has been completely cut off from decision making. You are admitting that you're so pig-headed that you won't accept the assistance or help or advice from any other country because you're the greatest country on earth. No, you know, so again, it is a plan die, you know, and again, 2. However million people, we're just gonna go along with this. What, like, again, I need to go. I feel sick.
Yeah, we're all gonna be sick. I mean, okay, I try to be fair, so let's be fair. This strategy obviously looks bad, but let's at least briefly run down the differences between this strategy and doing absolutely nothing and letting it rampage through the country. There, we just did. It's just nothing. What is he doing? And like, if you're a Trump fan and you're in the audience right now, what is the national contact tracing plan? What is the national plan, as Francesca alluded to protect people in these nursing homes? What are they doing? What resources have gone out? What directives do they have? Nothing. What are they doing in any way, anything to have to do with this for the last 3 months, at least maybe 4? What have they done? Trump resumed his press conferences. Did we learn a single fact about the recovery throughout all of those? He announced that you could use the convalescent plasma, or as he says, plasma, which the doctors say there's no good evidence yet that it actually helps. At the very least, it's not bleach and it's not hydroxychloroquine, so it seems like it won't kill you. So maybe that's better than his previous things that he's added. But there's also no evidence it helps you, so I'm not really gonna give him all that much credit. The numbers have continued to spread and he doesn't care, and it is obvious why, because he's just gonna let it spread. The only inoculation they have done is to inoculate their fans against the horror of what is going on. And so a different way every week, they have told them this isn't something you have to worry about. And they've had 20 or 30 different things of that. And recently they had their thing that all the fake news sites are spreading, that the CDC says that only 6% of people actually died from COVID. It's not at all what they say. It's nothing like what it's being presented as. But hey, if it makes you feel warm and toasty and comfortable and doesn't mean that you have to open your eyes to the horror of more than 1,000 people continuing to die every single day, literally months after this pandemic hit, I get why that would be appealing to some weak-minded people. And you can see that spreading now. We're gonna talk about it a little bit more later. But just, I mean, how many times have we talked about the herd thing? They're just doing the herd thing.
They're just doing the herd thing. And also in Phoenix, Arizona, there is a case of a man being reinfected with COVID.
Yeah.
And it sucks. Like, come on, you guys. This is the whole thing, you know. QAnon is a shortcut for thinking, right? Like, conspiracy theories are shortcuts. The Red Hat is a shortcut for just a book, just reading a little bit, just read an article, you know, read your local newspaper, right? Like, what is actually happening is awful. We don't know. And so there are tons of unknowns, but we're moving in the opposite direction. We're moving towards not just herd immunity, but herd think when it comes to believing that this virus isn't real. And then you have things like someone being reinfected. And I get that that's scary. It's gonna have to be scary. And again, look at what other countries are doing. They don't know if people can get reinfected. They pretty much, you know, it's still a mystery. We don't have a vaccine. There is no cure. Ergo, you've got to do everything else possible to minimize death and illness. So yeah, anyway, just to say, the science isn't there. Just the science is, it's not there. Even if you were willing to accept 2 million people dying, there's a chance that people can get reinfected. So it's just not there.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, we shouldn't have great work by the Washington Post putting this together, multiple officials saying that. And this guy is like the new Fauci for Trump, this Scott Atlas, which we're gonna talk more about. But we don't even need it. When Trump gave his speech and they packed 1,500 people with 3 masks and 2 inches between them, and they didn't test everyone, what did they say? Why was that okay? What was the excuses given by the White House? And Jim Acosta talked to a representative, and the representative said, everyone's gonna get it. That is just an admission that they can call it herd immunity. They don't even understand the concept. I mean, the concept isn't even likely to work in this case, and the cost would be horrific, but they don't even care. It's just, it seems like a nicer, more scientific way to say, it's whatever, man, it is what it is. That's what the strategy is. It is what it is. The herd in herd strategy is not a threshold for limiting the transmission. It's what they think of our population as. The business leaders and the political leaders think there's a big dumb herd of sheep. Some of them will die, but not many of us. Maybe a Herman Cain on the edges, maybe one or two, but we're gonna be okay. And we think that this is gonna benefit the economy. They're wrong. It's not gonna help the economy, but they value that possibility more than potentially 2+ million lives.
And hey, thanks to structural racism in this country, what do you know? Black and brown communities feeling it more than others. So not really the MAGA crowd. Go on with your lives. Enjoy your lives, ladies and gentlemen. The black and brown communities are suffering the brunt of it. Great.
Exactly.
Like again, once again, we've talked about how this is very eugenics-like, and let's never forget that.
Scott Atlas, he's the guy that this Washington Post article is really shedding a lot of light on. But he's, to some people, not a new name. He is to me, because I don't watch Fox News, but we're gonna tell you all that we found out about him. So he's a neuroradiologist from Stanford's Conservative Hoover Institute. By the way, not an expert on infectious disease. He's a doctor, which is why they're lifting him up, but not on infectious disease and its spread. So bear that in mind. It might be an explanation, by the way, as to why he's been so consistently wrong about this one. So he's advocated that the US should adopt the model that Sweden has used in response to the virus outbreak. He's argued both internally and in public that an increased case count will move the nation more quickly to herd immunity and won't lead to more deaths if the vulnerable are protected. That is dumb when he said it before it was tested. Every day it gets stupider. The Sweden thing, I just love because conservatives in America have virtually never pointed to another country to say that's what we should do. They did it for the first time and it made me long for the days when they only cared about America because they could not have gotten it more wrong than they did. So let's bring up Sweden. So Dr. Tom Frieden compared the death count. So this is deaths per million people. I understand if you're on a small screen, you can't read all those labels. So let me summarize. There's a bunch of numbers down at the bottom. Those are Sweden's neighbors geographically. The two numbers at the top are the US and Sweden. Sweden's a little bit higher than us in deaths per million, actually. 6 times higher than all of its geographic neighbors. So they've decided to point to a country that has failed on American levels to address this pandemic with their boneheaded strategy of herd immunity, which basically just means not doing anything. All of the countries around them took it more seriously and have had far fewer deaths and have suffered less economically, because what turns out that when people keep dying every day for literally months, that hurts your economy. Now, it was stupid when they said it at the beginning, when the initial weeks of evidence back in March and April showed that Sweden wasn't doing a great job in this. They're still doing it despite months of evidence that it's failed. They don't care that it failed because their audience, the people that are eating this up on Fox News and Twitter, hear Sweden model and think, oh, some other country did it. If I talk about this, I'm gonna sound cosmopolitan, like I understand what's going on around the world. I'm not gonna do a damn second of research. I'm just gonna say it. And so that chart is more information about this debate than literally anyone talking about on Twitter will actually have.
That's
the strategy that we should follow. That's
it. Makes me feel good that another country is getting it as wrong as we are. We're 328 million. Sweden is 10 million people. 10 million people. And they still have the same million, right, one LA. They're on par with deaths per million. Wow, wow, what a failure. Good God, not just kind of a failure, not just a Brazil failure, like a worse than the US failure you're lifting up here.
And you know, yes, a worse than US failure being lifted up. That is a great way to summarize Scott Atlas. So why is Atlas one of the top advisors of the president on this? I'm gonna tell you in a second, but you already know what it is. What is the one qualification? Okay, maybe there's two. Two qualifications. See, you're doing the money symbol, Francesca. That's a good point in general. Yes, the money thing is a good thing. But for Trump specifically, yeah, in general. For Trump, it's loyalty. But loyalty by itself doesn't necessarily get you noticed. What gets you noticed? appearances on Fox News. He's appeared 20 times on Fox News since the end of April, despite the fact that his appearances universally show him making terrible predictions and terrible ideas of what's gonna happen. In March, he predicted that there would be 10,000 deaths from COVID. In the end, only 10,000. In April, he said that the pandemic appears to be entering the containment phase. In May, he said the curves have been flattened. More recently, he's been telling people that we should totally reopen schools because kids don't spread coronavirus to their parents, which is as wrong as all of his other previous predictions. But in America, particularly in DC, nothing moves you up like being wrong. And so he's now one of the top medical advisors of the president, despite having no expertise in infectious diseases and a track record of being as wrong on the pandemic as, like, I don't know, Navarro and Mnuchin have been on the economy. He could not be more wrong. He said on April 13th, we now need to re-enter normal life and continuing full popular, this is on the Hill by the way, continuing full population isolation and waiting for a vaccine would be doubling down and yielding to panic. And to in his defense, he has never yielded to panic. He said on April 13th, we should re-enter normal life. That was like 120,000 deaths ago. And he hasn't changed his position. He hasn't panicked even when any rational person would.
This is what awaits us if we have four more years of Trump. I mean, I'm wondering how many like Hoover Institute rejects are going to be on Fox and then funneled up. And once again, I believe that if there are four more years, we will recycle back through all of the Trump administration officials once they're done with Dancing with the Stars, or they are the stars dancing with themselves. It scares me, you know. I mean, I feel like that, like I am if you want to go outside, and this is what the Democrats need to be saying every single breath. Trump did this, and if you want to go outside, if you want to eat in a restaurant again, if you want your kids to go to school safely again, if you want to go to work again, if you don't want to have your job be completely like vanish on you essentially, because you know corporations are going to be taking advantage of people working at home to further and further squelch them and make them do more work from home, et cetera, et cetera. If you want any of that, Trump needs to be gone. It's just basic. It is basic. So like, yes, Biden's a neoliberal, Kamala's a neoliberal. You know what neoliberals do well? They make things safe for business. They know how to like get things going because they do like global capitalism. But like MAGA idiots and Trump at the helm, you know, they are like, they're just strongman populism who believe that they can force a reality on a population and force people back to work when everything around us is telling us the opposite. So like, I get that people want to say they're the same. They're incredibly not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, we're headed, this is just like, look, dude, after the RNC, I'm like, North Korea is taking notes. North Korea's like, didn't think of that. Done and done and done. You know, so if we don't think, what's this dude's name again? Scott.
Which one? Scott Atlas?
Scott Atlas. Scott Atlas shrugged. Scott Atlas shrugged at all of the deaths. You know, our bodies will feed the market. Exactly. Hey, I want to get back to Democrats who believe that we should be actually in the workforce, not trampled underneath it with our death.
Capitalism is people. It's people.
Markets are people. This is the whole point.
Shove us into the machine. Shove us into the machine and just grind us up. Yes. And as they're being shoved into the machine, Trump fans are shouting, more, four more years, four more, blah, blah. And that's what it is.
Yes. Because if you died, you died for the cause of the fantasy. You died for the dream, baby.
Yeah.
You died for the dream that COVID's not real.
There's a quiet dignity to that. Well, it's not quiet and it's not dignity, but there's something to that. Yeah. And who thinks the next pandemic's gonna go back? Oh, Trump will take the next one more seriously after he's been taught that he can win re-election when doing nothing for the first one. My God, to have been, you know how bad I wanted to be wrong after 2016 about what was gonna happen? I never predicted any of this. This is so much worse. recently it's been going around that you don't gotta worry about coronavirus, because did you know that only 6% of the people that have died from coronavirus didn't have literally anything else going wrong at the same time? Now that, if you don't wanna believe the pandemic is real, is an excuse to write off the entire death count. And indeed, people have been doing that. Not just randos, some people who have a particular connection to this virus, like the Kane Gang, tweeted by V. Herman Kane. It looks like the virus is not as deadly as the mainstream media first made it out to be. He died of the virus that his Twitter account is now trying to convince you is not dangerous. That's America in 2020. That is, Orwell never thought of that. Like, a person would try to convince people not to worry about the thing that killed them.
Like, what's next? Are they gonna dig him up and then just try to like make his mouth move with strings, you know, and like, or stuff him? Why don't you just stuff Herman Cain and tell him, you know, make his mouth move and say all your facts? Like, actually, coronavirus isn't real. Actually, I had so many other heart conditions. Like, that's the level of respect that you're giving this man at this point, right? And look, Herman Cain was not a saint. I'm not saying that, but my God, have a little bit of respect for the dead.
Yeah, and I get it. It's a Twitter account that already has some followers. It's hard to start over. But here's the thing, it's not that hard when you're a Trump supporter. Just like, put up a photo of a 43-year-old blonde woman and reply to all of Trump's tweets. You'll have 300,000 followers in a matter of days. Honestly, there's a lot of people that's their whole thing.
Is just, I really need
I'm
to
one
do
of the
that.
Blonde women that tweets at Trump.
I need to do that, dude.
You should. Just, yeah, put on your Melania wig or whatever and just tweet at him, and you will get so many followers for free. And so, like, dragging him out of the grave and through the mud to convince other people who haven't yet died of coronavirus that they shouldn't worry about it. I don't have the ability, the mental ability or the linguistic ability to truly analyze how sick that is and then to express it in words, I think. But it's something. I think that's one for the history books, if there are history books. That tweet, by the way, links to an article from conservative news site Western Journal, which a New York Times investigation found in 2019 was blacklisted from Apple News over doubts over its adherence to scientific norms. But beyond that, Western Journal is actually one of the sites that was originally the progenitor of the term fake news. They would just make up from a whole cloth articles that would sell online. That's them, and it's now being spread by Herman Cain. Or the account of Herman Cain. And anyway, just to the substance of what the CDC said. So there are comorbidities, things that contribute to death or that are true of you while you're dying. It does not mean that those people didn't die from coronavirus. The CDC is not saying that, no rational person thinks that. But as we've said many times in this hour, it's convenient if you already don't wanna believe that this is real. If you wanna believe, and by the way, they're presenting it as if these people had coronavirus and some other rare illness, like congenital insensitivity to pain or something. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about like being overweight, having been sick in the past, those sorts of things. These are not rare. These are the vast majority of Americans have that. If you believe that a person was obese and had coronavirus and died, and it was probably the obesity's fault, not the coronavirus, don't even share the article, because you clearly just already want to believe that. You're not being convinced by this Western Journal piece. It's just, again, everybody just wants to be wrapped up in a blanket and held and have their hair stroked and told that everything they believe is awesome and perfect and good. And that's what this is. And now verified Twitter account The Kane Gang is contributing to that.
Yeah, it's blaming people for their own death. And it's hard to imagine that conservatives and Republicans can call themselves religious. I mean, if you are a religious person, what kind of empathetic God do you worship? Like, what? It's absolutely disgusting. I mean, thought you had some amount of value for human life to the point where you want to legislate against zygotes in a woman's uterus. Like, what happened to any of that? Like, is Jesus coming back at the end of this? Because if Jesus is not coming back at the end of this, like, y'all owe us an apology.
Yeah, it's perfect for them, really, that they get to effectively like rocket boost us into the end times And that's what they want. They want the end of the world, but like I don't.
What's so funny about that is like there's a whole rest of the world, John. Like America is not the world. The rest of the world, they're not in apocalyptic times, really. I mean, they've taken the proper measures. They're scared. There's a lot of uncertainty, but like we're like in straight Hunger Games survival mode, you know, Walking Dead type things. And like there was an EDM concert in Wuhan, China. All right. Last week, an EDM concert in Wuhan, the epicenter of the virus. Right? Yeah. Like we are granted, just I don't one go fraction to that either, of the world. Yeah. I'm not gonna go to that. I mean, mostly for the music, I'm not gonna go. But like,
yeah, that's what I mean. It's feeling like The Handmaid's Tale. I don't mean substantively the Christian fascism or whatever. There's also that, but just that like we're, you know, if he's talking about S word countries, that's we are. Like they're gonna, like France is gonna be okay next year. Like, you know, France will have French problems or whatever, but they're not gonna be shut down the same way as unless they allow us back in. The worst decision another country can make in the near future is to deal with us, honestly, because we will spread our virus. Both the literal and the metaphorical viruses that make up our country will be spread. An anti-mask rant at an Alaska Walmart has gone viral for reasons that will imminently become very clear. Take a look at this individual being asked to leave the Walmart because of his refusal to wear a mask and the way he chooses to express his frustration.
Get back on your highway to hell and get out of a godly man's face. No, I will. By your very blind ignorant, you don't have the ability to even come up with your own ideas. You exercising your right as a private company. Take away my rights.
Jesus Christ.
You can refuse service. Are you refusing my service?
Yes.
Why don't you say we refuse your service? No. I choose to yell, and you cannot stop me.
Bye.
Please attend to the service of Satan in your ignorant belief that you are right.
That's cool. Bye.
Please, in the future, respect my rights. No one else's. You will never in my 6 foot space.
Have a good day.
And then think I'm not going to tell you. I will tell you you're wrong.
I know.
Stop me?
I know.
Do you want to stop?
Don't touch her. Don't touch her.
Bring your police. Bring your police.
Have a good day.
You will not.
Have a good day.
I
got you on video, so why don't you just go ahead and leave?
I have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Have a good day.
My happiness is best served by standing in your face. You say you are fool and wrong. You're no authority over me.
Quit speaking all over people.
Huh? And when you got my face and threatened to hit me, you were this
because you stepped
up
in my
face.
Ain't nobody threatening me in the store.
You said you would. Turn you little mind. You aren't even human. You're only an animal.
And thus passes the godly man. So there's more. You can go see. It's like 3 minutes long of him shouting and waving his arm. That's like a grown. That's like a 65-year-old man, a godly man, who lost everything that he had on those people, swearing. Like how many bleeps did we have to add to that? Of him trying and failing to intimidate that woman, like getting in her face, and she doesn't budge an inch against that guy. And unfortunately, in these dark times of the pandemic, the customer is always right wing. It turns out they're always a crazy right winger. He said one time, respect my rights and no one else's. He said, I have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And my happiness is best served telling you you're wrong and stupid. Those people work at Walmart, so they definitely don't get paid enough to deal with that sort of individual.
There's so many things to say about this video. One, you know, quarantine will do a number on your brain, as evidenced by that gentleman and his orange sweatpants. It's hard out there, I know. You need a new pair of sweatpants. and you didn't want to wear a mask, and you've been listening to Rush Limbaugh indoors for too long. I get it. Your brain is mush. Great. Here's the thing about all of this. It should not be left to retail workers making a starting wage of $11 an hour to try to extricate, to get a customer who's being violent and abusive out of their store. It's not okay from a corporate perspective. It's not okay that Walmart is leaving their employees to do this. And it's not okay that the country and the state and Alaska are not having, you know, an armed guard or a police officer to get someone out of the store if need be, if they're being violent like that. It's absolutely not okay. And I want to lift up the work of an organization called United for Respect. You can follow them, I believe, at For Respect. And they're working with Amazon workers and Walmart workers, because they have a lot of stories. A lot of them are, Walmart supercenters are no man's lands. They're insane. They are overcrowded. People don't respect sort of, you know, the amount of social distancing. And we've seen these are once again corporations that are making hand over fist billions more dollars than they were before this pandemic started. And the employees are not getting any kind of hazard pay. That means no additional pay. There's a little bit of a bone that's thrown, like, oh, here's a little bit of a bonus, but that's not a boost in their salary, which is already incredibly low. So that's one. Two is the warped idea of your freedom, your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which is you mentioned and that he said, my rights are greater than yours. Straight up pointing, like, my rights are more important in this moment than your rights. My right to yell, my right to spread a virus, my right to harm. No, man, that's not in the Constitution, actually. That is not part of this country and how it was founded, right? You don't just get the right to spread a virus and put people at risk because you don't want to wear a mask. Right, because your individual rights are being harmed. And it's even more disgusting in the ways that we've seen that white people in this country, whenever they want to have a gun, whenever they want to go maskless, their rights are all constantly protected by police officers and by others in every kind of institution. Whereas if a black person has a gun, Philando Castile has a gun, licensed to carry, he gets shot dead, right? And so many other instances, black and brown Americans' rights, their individual rights are never respected. Yeah. And here he is yelling and spittling all over, you know, what I believe to be a woman of color, who is again just standing down with the utmost bravery and grace. And it should never be that woman's job. And I truly am serious. I tweeted, I want to send her on a spa day. I want to give her something. I want to thank her because she truly deserves it. So I would like to know eventually her name and how people can just support her. Just,
I mean, if she wants to come on the show.
Yeah, she wants to come on TDR, get over here or stay there.
Jen Jeffries replied to one of those videos on Twitter saying, can we talk about the woman here having better de-escalation skills than any cop ever? 100%.
So good.
That said, if he made a lot of bad decisions there, if he had tried to go beyond intimidation to fighting her, I think that would have been a horrible decision on his part, because she was not scared at all of this old man who thinks that because I'm angry and flailing my arms, I'm intimidating in some fashion. The only intimidating thing about him is his willingness to potentially spread a fatal illness to all those around him. And honestly, I know that there's, you know, there's thresholds for this, but in a pandemic that's still killing more than 1,000 people a day, like, though, when he gets in your face and is spitting in your face and breathing on you, how is that not assault in some form? Like, and they didn't touch him, they didn't hurt him. But I can't expect that most people would have that restraint to not do that, knowing how many people have died, how many people working at stores like Walmart have died. Man, they had more control than I think almost anyone could be expected to. Now, Walmart put out a statement saying, it's unfortunate that this individual chose to express their displeasure in such an inappropriate manner, but we're proud our associates displayed patience and professionalism as they navigated this challenging situation.
Shut up.
Part of the thing that makes it challenging is, maybe it's changed very recently, but in July, Walmart began stationing health ambassadors at the entrance to their stores to encourage, but not require, customers to wear masks. Now, there might be local or state ordinances that supersede that, but one way you can show support for your employees is to make sure that anyone who goes to work at a Walmart doesn't have to worry about anyone being near them without a mask. So that's what I would say. And then again, this is not just about an individual. That man is crazy, no matter what. I get that. To do one of these Trader Joe or Walmart, losing your mind, Panera, losing your mind, that's crazy, no matter what. But it becomes a little bit easier to understand why they're crazy in this particular way when they are so often deceived into thinking that their belief about the level of danger posed by this pandemic is accurate. So that man thinks he should be able to walk through a Walmart without a mask today, maybe partially because like 3 or 4 days earlier, he had seen this and sees 1500 people sitting next to each other in an alternate reality where the pandemic doesn't exist, where they don't have to get tested, they don't have to wear masks. If all of the rich glitzy elites don't have to wear masks, why would I have to wear one in a Walmart? And that was of course the point of that gathering. Trump wanted to send the signal to everyone, the pandemic's done, we've moved past it, we're back in normal times, but we're not back in normal times. We're not, you still have to wear a mask in Walmart, outside of the White House, whatever. Is incredibly irresponsible, and it is encouraging people to act in the way that we saw in that Walmart.
Absolutely. Someone get that dude a gaming console, man.
Something.
Stay home, use Instacart, bruh.
Seriously, and you know, there's the racial component to it. As you pointed out, that woman, as well as others in that group of employees, were people of color. And of course, it was not missed that he shouted, "You're not even humans, you're animals." Maybe he just meant all of them, including the white people, but maybe not. Maybe there's a pretty clear racial component of that too. It has been very common over the past few months for representatives of the US government in talking about the pandemic to completely downplay the threat of dying during this pandemic if you are younger than 50 or 60 or 70 years old. But many people in the lower age categories have died. In particular, certain communities have been very hard hit. And of course, frontline healthcare workers have from the very beginning of this pandemic been one of those groups. And joining us now to break down some of his recent research and writing around this area, Alistair G, reporter for The Guardian, joining us now. How's it going?
Thanks so much for having me, I'm good.
Thank you for joining us. You had an article profiling several of these frontline workers in their 20s and some in their 30s who have died as a result of this pandemic. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found in your research?
Yeah, so The Guardian and Kaiser Health News have been partnering on this really remarkable project to try and catalog every healthcare worker in America that has died of COVID-19 while working on the front lines. And the US government isn't doing a good job of tracking this data. And we found that unfortunately, it looks like at least 1,000 healthcare workers that we've identified so far, it seems have died of COVID, have been reported to have died of COVID, and we're investigating all of them. I looked at a specific subset of those, at these young healthcare workers, because we were finding in this list of, you know, over 1,000 names that there were surprisingly large numbers of younger people popping up. And in particular, we found at least 8. There are definitely more, but these are 8 that we could confirm people under the age of 30. And these were people who had their whole lives ahead of them, their whole careers ahead of them. Some of them still lived at home. They lived with roommates. I mean, they were very, very young people. But unfortunately, despite what we've heard about younger people being a lower risk, that may be true, but that doesn't mean that there is no risk. And these people that I profiled contracted COVID-19 while at work and died of it.
And I know that in some of these cases, there might not be a great deal of information available, but is this simply a matter of, you know, however low your chances are with enough people being exposed, some people are going to fit into that category? Are there cases where it seems like there was some other influence that led to this outcome? What's the cause of this fact that some of these were incredibly young healthcare workers?
Well, healthcare workers in general, research has shown, are 3 times likelier to contract COVID just because of their exposure to it at work. And young people in this environment, you know, there are certain risk factors for all people. Smoking, for instance, is one of them, having respiratory problems or asthma. You know, it's hard to tell in many cases. I mean, what we know, for instance, about one of the people that I profiled, his name is Joshua Obra. He was a 29-year-old who lived in Anaheim, California. Living in Anaheim, he loved Disneyland. He was, in fact, something of an influencer on Instagram, thanks to all his Disney posts. He worked at a nursing home for people with dementia and Alzheimer's in particular, and other cognitive issues. And there was a very, very large outbreak at his nursing home, and a total of 14 people died in his one nursing home alone of COVID-19. And so he had exposure at work. He worked with his sister, in fact, his younger sister. They both contracted COVID at the same time, and she survived while he didn't. Another healthcare worker that I profiled, his name is Dennis Bratt, and he had a very similar situation. He worked in an alcohol and drug addiction facility where there was an extremely large, or a relatively large, outbreak of COVID. And he was one of those who contracted it. And it's unclear why exactly he was the, you know, the healthcare worker of many who worked there who died. But ultimately, he and his wife did contract it, and he passed away after having been on a ventilator. And so what the story shows is really young people may be at lower risk, but with our healthcare workers who face so much more exposure than the general population, the risk is higher. And as one of the medical experts I spoke to told me, he said it should be unacceptable for us to have any young people that die of COVID in this country. These are people with their whole lives ahead of them. And yet the way that we have failed to get a handle on this pandemic has just exacerbated the risk for these young healthcare workers.
Yeah, you know, to go back to the first statistic that you mentioned, I think that for a lot of Americans, if you had told them on day one, whatever day that was of the American, you know, version of this pandemic, that 1,000 Americans would die, they would have thought, well, that by itself is horrific. The idea that that's just the healthcare workers that have died, that really puts it into perspective. You know, over the past few months, there's been a lot, especially up until a few months ago, of, you know, people talking about how much they owe to these healthcare workers, and, you know, talking about them being heroes and things like that. Did you get the opportunity to talk to many of the people who've survived this and get an impression of what they think about the response? Do they feel like they've been prioritized or protected? How do they feel about the way that the social view of this pandemic has evolved over time?
They simply think that people are not taking it seriously enough. I spoke to the surviving relatives of the two people I mentioned, and they've been making Facebook posts, Instagram posts saying, look, it can happen to you. Take it seriously, wear a mask. This is real. This is not some, I don't know, it's not blown out of proportion, they say. And yeah, they are, some of the ones that I spoke to are angry at the way that the system has failed to respond. And I think it's unequivocal that we are simply not prepared to handle this pandemic. If you look at, for instance, some of the supplies that the federal government has been shipping to nursing home healthcare workers, for instance, it's been widely reported that these supplies are, that they're basically shipping, you know, instead of a protective gown, they're shipping a plastic bag without armholes. They're shipping insufficient masks, as we've reported. And so,
wow,
the government is simply is not doing what it should to protect these healthcare workers. And we can only hope that is starting to shift.
You know, I don't know that if you've read the Washington Post reporting about the Trump administration apparently pursuing, not in a public way, but pursuing a herd immunity strategy recently, while saying that they're going to be doing what they can to protect vulnerable populations, such as those in nursing homes. It sounds like, from what you're saying, in terms of the focus on nursing homes, that protection doesn't seem to be coming in terms of supplies, protective equipment, and things like that.
Well, the problem with a herd immunity strategy is that you have very large casualties in the pursuit of pursuing it. And that's why, you know, in The Guardian, we've reported on this. People say that it's simply unethical to pursue that kind of approach because there will be casualties as a result. There were reports early on that the UK actually was pursuing a so-called herd immunity strategy before reversing course, I think, for the reasons I've mentioned. It's simply, how many deaths are you willing to have on your conscience if you pursue such a strategy? Because that's inevitably what it will entail.
Exactly. And not to mention that, like, from the perspective of the Trump administration, as someone who's been very critical of their response from the very beginning, it seems shockingly like just not doing anything and applying a label to it that sounds vaguely scientific. That's what it feels like to me. But anyway, while the pandemic has been, you know, ravaging America, and in particular in California, some of the case studies that you talked about were here in California, we're also dealing with wildfires yet again. And I know that this is something that you've recently written about in the Guardian. You have a book as well that you've written about this. So far, the 2020 versions of the wildfires, how do they compare in quantity, in severity, to some of the past seasons we've had in California?
Well, I think what's so remarkable about wildfires this year is both the rapid rate at which they have grown and the area that they have consumed. At one point, a couple of weeks ago, there was what fire scientists called a fire siege in the Bay Area, where there was a fire burning in every Bay Area county except for San Francisco itself, which is entirely urbanized. And the land area that was burned in just a week was equivalent to something like the entire area of land that had burned in 2019. And wow. I think what fire scientists are observing is that we are really in an era of what is called mega fires. And I wrote about one of them in my book, Fire in Paradise, which is about the fire that destroyed an entire town, the town of Paradise, California, in 2018. The same year we saw a fire tornado. We've also seen fires in wine country that have killed dozens. And so the kinds of fires that we're seeing now, they are emerging. They are extremely large, despite our extremely advanced technology for fire suppression. That the thousands of men and women who are willing to suppress fires for whatever reason. Well, I'd say for whatever reason, we know the reasons. This fire suppression is stopping working, no longer works. And one of the main reasons that this is happening is because California is ever hotter. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, the hottest ever temperature on Earth, it looks likely, was recorded in Death Valley. At the time of these fires recently, the state was seeing extreme heat. The state's snowpack is ever smaller. And so climate change is not the only reason these fires are occurring, because California is used to fires. It evolves to have fires, but it's a very strong signal.
Exactly. And in your writing, I like that you point out, basically, there's a lot of people sort of waiting for some indication that climate change has finally hit, as if, you know, there's going to be one day that's suddenly going to become much hotter. But you lay out some of the weather patterns and things like that that have influenced this. Could you? I know it gets pretty technical pretty fast, but can you give us a little bit of an idea of how the warming and changed climate patterns that we're already seeing is helping to influence storms like or firestorms like this?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of it is to do with dryness. And for instance, in the 2010s, California saw some of its hottest years ever. It went into a prolonged drought, the effects of which continue to be felt. And even in the week of the fires, as I mentioned, there was extreme dryness. And what this does to the vegetation is it essentially draws the vegetation that's within the plant material into the air. And that plant becomes still a plant, but it's also become tinder, essentially. Mm. And then you combine this with what occurred in California several weeks ago, which was a massive lightning storm that occurred as a result of a decaying tropical storm in the Pacific, sending moisture over California, which sparked this lightning storm. You combine this lightning and this extremely dry vegetation, and you have a recipe for that fire siege.
Wow. And to have all of these things simultaneously striking the same state, even worse, of course. But we appreciate your reporting. Could you remind people of where they can find out more about your book, actually, if they want to learn more about this phenomenon?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's called Fire in Paradise, an American Tragedy. And you can go to fireinparadisebook.com to find the book.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your research and, breaking down a couple of very important stories that people aren't taking perhaps seriously enough. We appreciate you joining us today on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.